RVFTA's Campground of the Week is sponsored by Jayco. To view their complete line of RVs, visit jayco.com.
America the Beautiful. There is adventure to be found around every corner.
And there is no better way to explore it than by staying at one of our country's 14,000 campgrounds.
Our team of correspondents will guide you to the best places to park your rig or pitch your tent.
On each week's episode, we'll give a complete review of one campground, location, activities, amenities, best sites, and tons of other insider intel.
Plus, we'll talk about regional highlights, food, culture, attractions, family fun, and all things great outdoors.
From the East Coast to the West Coast, and from the Great Lakes to the Mississippi Delta, it's time to hit the open road with RVFTA's Campground of the Week. Our Western correspondent is Brett Nielsen of BrettNielsen.com. Brett is an infrastructure engineering manager for a software company. To break away from the high-tech world, he enjoys camping with his wife Ashley and daughter Lily. The three of them are based in Utah and frequently find themselves enjoying extended weekends in state and federal campgrounds. He blogs about his travels at BrettNielsen.com. Brett likes to say that time camping isn't spent, it's invested.
Welcome back to the show, Brett.
Hey guys, how are you?
We are fantastic. Last time on episode number 9 of Campground of the Week, you took us to Antelope Island State Park in Utah. Where are you taking us to this week?
Well, we're going to stay in Utah, but we're going to head all the way to the east side, and we're going to go to the Green River Campground located in Dinosaur National Monument.
And we're almost in Colorado here, correct?
Almost. We are right on the border. In fact, Dinosaur National Monument straddles the border between Utah and Colorado. So the camping side of it where we are is on the Utah side, but the monument actually stretches well into Colorado.
Okay, so we have a lot of listeners from Colorado, so hopefully they'll be happy to get this recommendation. Now, orient us a little more geographically according to some cities that are around.
Sure. So Dinosaur National Monument is 195 miles east of Salt Lake City, which is about 3.5 hours, or for our Colorado folks, 326 miles west from Denver, about 5 3/4 hours to get there, maybe 6 hours, depending on traffic and speed.
Okay, so a day trip. You can drive there
easily
in a day. Okay.
Easily from Salt Lake or Denver, easy to get there in a day.
And do you get a mix of people from both Colorado and Utah who are camping there?
Yeah, we the campers that we talked to were from both, as well as all around the country. So we definitely see a mix in the campground.
Well, even though I'm dying to know more about Dinosaur National Monument, we're going to hold off on that for a minute and learn more about this campground, okay? So it's in the Dinosaur National Monument, so I'm assuming it's a public campground.
Yep. This is one of our federal ones out there, run by the National Park Service. So it's within the confines of the National Park, run by the National Park Service, right there within the close range of the visitor center and everything else. So,
what is the camping season there, and how many sites does the campground have?
Yeah, so this campground has a fairly short season. I would say it's April to October. It's not as short as one of the campgrounds I talked about previously, which was Jordanelle, but here at Dinosaur National Monument in the Green River Campground, it's April to October. They've got 79 sites that are there, so it's a pretty good size, pretty decent size.
Yeah.
But you can only reserve the sites that are in Loop B, which is about 34 sites. The rest are all first come, first serve.
Okay. So if that's the case, how hard is it to make reservations?
Well, so talking to the people there at the campground and the people at the visitor center, they said the campground very rarely actually fills up. It really only fills up on major holidays. Now, coming out of Salt Lake with kids in tow, 3.5 hours into the journey, I'm not brave enough to risk that. There's a lot of things I'm brave for, but no reservation scares me. So we made reservations, and there were plenty of open spaces there. We could have easily driven right in and picked one of the spots, but we went ahead and made reservations through Reserve America and got those. And you can make those reservations up to 12 months in advance. But really, from what we saw and what we talked to the rangers there, you really don't need them unless you're coming in over a major holiday or something, a major weekend like that.
Are you on a first name basis with the folks at Reserve America? Do they like they have like a painting of you on the wall in the office there?
They should. I should get like a frequent booking card or something.
You're like an ambassador.
Yes. I mean, here in Utah, like all of our state parks, the federal parks, everything all go through Reserve America. So it's kind of convenient that way, because when we're going to book something, that's where we go. So it makes it easy in that respect. It's not the greatest resource in the world, but it's nice and simple and pretty straightforward to use. So.
Well, they should use you as an ambassador, because
yes,
you are one of the more positive people about Reserve America.
Try not to be negative.
When I go on to Reserve America, I'm like, how does this work?
So
there's all these
annoyed.
X's and O's and L's and N's, all these codes.
Yes. All right, so how much are we paying for this?
Well, so in carrying with the tradition of very expensive Utah campgrounds, this one's a whopping $18 a night, which is actually up from the previous year, which was $12. So
stop the madness, Brett. $12? It used to be $12.
Yes.
A couple years before that, they used to pay you to camp there.
They did. So, but yeah, $18 a night to camp here right within the National Monument.
And we were just joking before we went on air, saying like the national parks are always saying they don't have enough money, and then they're charging $18 a night to camp.
Yeah, it's crazy. That would be an easy thing to up the fees, yeah, even just a few dollars. And at that, nobody's going to complain for what you get, the beauty that you get in these campgrounds, and how close you are within the park to everything. It's just it's unbelievable. You can access that for $18. That just it blows me away.
You could jack up the price by 50%, and it would be $27. Is my math correct on that?
Yeah.
A 50% increase. It's
yes.
Under $30.
No, yes, we just. Yeah. Are driving away our listeners right now, because we're sitting here recommending campgrounds raise their fees, and we just probably lost
we want them to exist in 10 years.
That's true. That's very true. Well,
okay.
but to that point, if they raise their fees, they'll be around and still under $30. That's a great deal. So
yeah. All right. Well, when we get to be in charge, Brett,
we'll
make the fees more reasonable. So these incredibly reasonable sites, tell us more about them.
Yeah, so the reason they are incredibly reasonable in price is there's no hookups here. There's no water, there's no power, there's no sewer. So as far as amenities in the actual site that you get, this is all dry camping. You get a picnic table, a fire ring. There are flush toilets there on site, but there's no showers. There's nowhere to fill up tanks in your rig or anything like that. They do have a couple of spigots around that you can fill up water jugs if you want to do that. But it's really basic camping, and that's how come they can get that fee so cheap, is because they're really not spending much to even maintain it. So
that's generous of them to have the couple of spigots and the flush toilets.
Yeah, it gets warm here in the summertime, and that it would be nice to have the water to fill up that way, so you can fill up a backpack or something like that if you need to. So
we're talking back-in sites, pull-through sites.
Yeah, so we definitely have a mix here. There's a mix of back-in, pull-through, and what I call pull-off, which a pull-off looks like somebody was, you know, maybe had a long lunch or something when they paved, and they just kind of swung out a little wide, and they call that a site. I really don't like those pull-off sites, because you are totally exposed on the driver's side of your rig to the rest of the traffic. There's no barrier between you and the road. So I always say to avoid those, but otherwise a mix of back-in and pull-through. We had a back-in when we were there. It's all asphalt driveways and a dirt site. And there's not many trees and very little things in the way of shade here. So you do have to come prepared for sunshine and being basically fully exposed while you're there.
Are the back-ins better than the pull-throughs? Are the pull-throughs better than the back-ins?
Well, so one of the little things that I love to do is when I'm looking at a campground, I go find it on Google Maps and flip over to that satellite view, and I drill in as tight as I can to find out what the sites look like. So I looked for sites that have trees. And my favorite kind of campgrounds are the ones that I can't make out the road, the back end, the pull through, because it's all covered in trees. This one, I can easily see where all the sites are. And so I picked one that actually had a tree on it that was kind of covering where the rig would be. And we did get a little shade out of that. It was nice to have that. I would say there's a mix. If you have a good pull through rig here, you could easily get into some of those pull throughs. We used a back end that was wide enough that we actually could use part of the driveway as kind of a sitting area. We put our table out there with our chairs and had our nice little tree, and we were quite happy.
Now, I know you very intentionally bought your recent rig at like 30 feet or under, correct?
Yes. Yeah, that was an intentional target for us to be able to do that.
So are you going to have a problem at this campground if you have something that's over 30 feet, if you're in a larger rig?
No, they do have really large sites here. I think they can accommodate up to a 45 here. So, you know, us at, we're at 28 where we're at with our new rig. And so I think we're just fine for that. Some of these, back ends would definitely be tight, if you have a larger rig, but we saw Class A's in here, that were definitely larger than what we have today, that were in some of the pull off ones that, were right there on the side of the road and easily can be accommodated a large rig. So
any tenting sites, Brett?
Nothing that's specific to tents. You can have tents at a lot of locations. Up in the far north end of the campground, when we were there, there was a large group that was there that they had a couple of RVs and a bunch of tents laid out in that area, but nothing that's specifically designated for just tents.
Okay, so I'm assuming that this campground itself doesn't have a lot of activities or amenities, since it doesn't have any hookups, or it just sounds pretty bare bones. Is that true?
That is very true. Yeah, the campground here is a place to cook and eat and kind of relax. There's no playgrounds. There's no amenities beyond, you know, the basic stuff you have in your site.
What's the best time of year to go?
So we went right in May, which the average high temperature is about just over 70 degrees. So it's a pretty, you know, pretty good temperature there. As you get into July and August, you get up into your 90 degree temperatures. That's going to be a little bit warm without power. And, you know, then you kind of start filtering down from there. So I would really look to hit this one April, May, or September, October kind of time frame. June would be okay, your mid-80s, but you're definitely going to want to figure out something for moving some air around in the trailer or wherever you got the motorhome or whatever it is. So,
all right. So, Brett, I know you mentioned already some of the sites that you thought were better with the trees and to look at, you know, the Google Maps satellite in order to see what those are. Are there any other campground insider details that you feel like people need to know?
Yeah, so the probably the biggest one is, like I said here, is avoid the pull-off sites. The one I had noted was like site number 82. These are these ones that you just slightly pull off, like you're pulling off on the shoulder of a road. They're not good sites. I really just don't like those. As far as that, every other site is pretty equal. The only other caution that I would have really is there is a large squirrel population in the park. If you leave stuff out, they will come and partake at your site.
Now, are the squirrels large, or are there just a lot of them?
There's kind of a combination, but there's a large number of them. So, I thought I was being really crafty, and I took our trash at the end of the night. We have one of those little pop-up trash cans, and I had a garbage sack in there and tied it up. And actually, in the nice little tree that we had, I raised it up so it was off the ground. Thought I was being all smart and clever. Well, the little squirrels decided to run up the tree, jump from the tree into the garbage can, get in the garbage, and then they ate a hole through my little pop-up thing and came out the bottom. So,
are there any signs in the campground saying no refunds because of mad squirrels?
No. Not like Antelope Island, where we have no refunds for bugs. They didn't disclose that here. So I presume you could claim squirrel and try to get a refund.
Okay. So they can't really do probably a lot about the squirrel population, no. But we know that nobody's perfect, and there might be some other things that this campground could improve on. Sure. Is there?
Yeah, so, I mean, on the big end, it's a big undertaking, but power would really be nice here. With the hot months, June, July, August, you know, you're in the 80s and 90s, it would be great to have power there. They allow generators, but it would be great to have plug-ins, but that's a pretty big undertaking. Honestly, this campground was one of our favorites. Our trip here was a highlight for us, probably our top highlight out of 2015. The only thing that I would see, is there's another campground that's north of this one called the Split Mountain Campground, and they've closed that campground. So all the camping is in this Green River Campground now. And we took a hike over to Split Mountain, and it is beautiful over there. Big trees, just, it is amazing in that area. And I don't know why they closed that one and not this one. This one's a great campground, but I would say if they could do anything, flip-flop it, open Split Mountain and close Green River. So
now, you said this was a highlight for you guys in 2015. If you could pinpoint why that was, what would it be? Was it that hike? Was it just the natural beauty of the campground?
Yeah, it was. It, for some reason, we all talked, and this trip we kept going back to as our favorite, and that was really hard for me. Like, I really wanted to kind of dive in on that and to try to figure out what that was, because this last year we went up to Glacier and we did some great things, but coming here to Dinosaur was definitely our highlight, and it was just such a nice experience. It was a calm and peaceful area. It wasn't very crowded when we were there. And some of the hikes we took were just really great. We had a great time. Our favorite hike, our top hike of the year, was the River Trail to the Split Mountain Campground, which is right out of Green River Campground. It's about 3.2 miles out and back, and we saw lots of deer and rabbits and lizards, and there was an otter swimming around in the river there. And you walk up to this abandoned campground, and you just kind of explore it. I'm not sure how long it's been gone, but it's all overgrown now, and it's kind of got an eerie feeling, but we were there right at sunset, and so it was just beautiful when we were there. It was great.
Well, I'm sure that we're going to hear a lot more details about why this became your favorite family camping trip of the year when we come back after break and hear about the activities and attractions that are all around the Green River Campground. We'll be back in a minute. Generations of family fun. It's what Jayco's founder, Lloyd Bontrager, set out to provide nearly 50 years ago when he started the company on the family farm in 1968.
Today, Jayco, the world's largest privately owned RV manufacturer, is still focused on providing a way for families to create lasting memories.
From camping trailers to gas Class A motorhomes and everything in between, you'll find that Jayco offers the most standard features and the best warranty in the industry, giving you the value you want and the peace of mind you deserve.
Visit your local Jayco dealer or jayco.com for more information. Jayco, generations of family fun. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We're here again with Brett Nielsen from brettnielsen.com, and he just gave us a great review of the Green River Campground in Dinosaur National Monument. Now he's going to tell us about all of the great activities that he did in the area.
Let's start with the park, Brett. Can you tell us what there is to see in Dinosaur National Monument?
Yeah, so obviously that's a big, big highlight of the Green River Campground. You're right there in the middle of Dinosaur National Monument. And as you might expect by the name, dinosaurs are a heavy feature. So the area there, there's an area just outside of the visitor center called the Quarry. It's a big section of rock that they've got over 1,500 bones that are exposed. So you can go into the quarry and see these. You can't get up and touch it, but you can stand on a platform. It's a two-level platform, so you can get up nice and high. They've got rangers there to kind of take you through things. So the quarry is a great place to see these bones actually still in the rock, where they've just partially uncovered them, and they're very exposed, and you can see that right from the viewing platform.
And is there a lot of like educational materials there to help you? You know, I always I feel like bones just kind of look like bones until somebody right. like brings it to life for me, you know, and tells yeah. me what I'm looking at.
So here's the insider tip. We were the same way. We're like, oh, dinosaurs. Yeah, that's cool. Let's go see them. Right. But when they're in the ground, like it's kind of a different deal because they're not put together as a skeleton like you would see in a museum. So one of the best things that we did, we found out that the rangers do a hike from the quarry down to the visitor center every day at 10 a.m. So what we did, and this worked out perfectly, and I'd highly recommend it, is you get up and have your breakfast, you get to the visitor center in time to take the tram. It's a little vehicle that'll drive you up to the quarry and get on the tram in time to get to the quarry at 10 o'clock for that hike. It'll let you ride off there, you get with the ranger, and you hike back down to the visitor center. Now, you can do this hike on your own. It's called the Fossil Discovery Trail, but you're looking at mountains of rock and you have no idea what to look at, right? You would literally miss every single thing. So the rangers take you down in, you know, in groups. We had probably five or six people in our group. They've got big old laminated flyers that they go through and they tell you about all the geology. Our ranger, and I'm sure the others, have like a green laser pointer, and they'll point to different things on the rock and show you different fossils and different bones and say, here's this, and they explain what's going on. It was probably the most educational hike that we've ever taken anywhere. It was fabulous to go all the way down.
And how did Lily like all of that? Was she processing all that?
Okay. She loved it. She maybe didn't process all of it because one of the things that was really neat here is it was the first time, like I live in the Salt Lake Valley. We've got mountains that surround us on all sides. And this was the first time I could really see the layers of these plates, if you will, that have been pushed up. And so you've got layers there from all different time periods going back, like I think it's about a billion years is the oldest layer there. And so the rangers take you through that and they show you layer by layer. So the blog post that I did on this was called Time Traveling, right? And that's really what it is, because literally these rangers take you back like a billion years ago and show you in the rock what was going on. And as you step down this hike, you go through all these different layers and they show you where the dinosaurs were and all these other things. And it's amazing. And now anytime I see a rock or something like that, I can see these layers in it and I understand like how the layers pushed up. And I don't know at six if she grasps that, but she definitely loved following the ranger down the trail and finding fossils that are still embedded in the rock on the wall. She just totally loved that part of it.
So Brett, we'll definitely link to that blog post in our show notes for this episode. So if everybody wants to find that, they can find it through campgroundoftheweek.com or they can just go right to your blog. But you know what? Also, you bring that up and I just want to stop and emphasize that for a minute is I think, you know, guided tours, for our younger generation, I think that they became a little passe for a while, right? Like we picture them as being more of an older folks thing or something mm-hmm. you don't really do with kids because you don't know if your kids are going to last through the tour. You know, people can be nervous. We just get so much out of every guided tour we take when we travel. And I would just really encourage our listeners to step outside their comfort zone and sign up for those tours because yeah. it just, otherwise it's kind of looking at pretty stuff, you know?
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah. Like, and we commented when we got down, we wouldn't have seen half of that. Yes, they have these little white dots on the wall in some areas that will show you some fossils, but the ranger pointed out so many more and had so much information to give us. It was great, and they don't charge for it. Again, your fee into the park and all this right. is included. It's unbelievable. So
what did you do after that? I know. I think you had a pretty perfect day that day, right?
Yeah. No, it was awesome. And so right as we finished the hike, we get down to the visitor center and it's lunchtime. So at that point, we jumped in the car and headed into town, had a great lunch. And then after lunch, we came back and worked through the visitor center a little bit more worked through the visitor center and then went back up to the quarry and actually spent time up at the quarry. So when we first went up there to do the hike, We just went on the hike and went back down. We didn't go look at the quarry, so we saved that until after lunch, and that worked out perfect. I would highly suggest anybody do that exact same thing.
You're modeling really good traveling right now, Brett, because you're also talking about how you can break one thing up. Like, just because you're there, you don't have to do everything at that moment. You can go off, have lunch, come back, and do another piece, and that keeps everybody happy and energized, right? And like, nobody's worn out and burned.
Because after that hike, they used to do an afternoon hike and they stopped because they said it was just getting too hot and they were having too many problems with people overheating. So they just do the 10 a.m. hike. It's still the temperatures are fine at that time. In the middle of summer, it would be starting to get warm by the time you get to noon. But you know, you're ready at that point. You come off that hike, you want to go eat lunch. There's not really anything there. There's a few little snacky things at the visitor center, but you really need to leave the park to go get food. And you can easily drive into one of the surrounding town, which is Vernal. And there's lots of restaurants and population there that you can get something to eat and then take a little break and come back.
So we'll talk about some specific restaurants in a minute, but is there anything else in the park? Any other hikes or anything else you really want to recommend to our listeners?
Yeah, we talked earlier about this, the river trail to the Split Mountain Campground. That's an excellent hike. The other thing that we did that was really cool is it's called the Tilted Rock Auto Tour. And you can get a guide at the visitor center, or they actually have little self-service stations off to the side of the road. And it's 10 miles one way. The last 2 miles of it are unpaved. But it's you take these little guides, and there's little pull-offs and little miniature hikes or short hikes that come off that road to go see various rock formations, things like petroglyphs and all that as you go down this path. As you get all the way to the end of it, you reach this cabin that was built in 1913, and it was actually occupied up until 1964, and it's Josie Bassett's cabin. And she lived there. There's no power, there's no running water. There's all kinds of history around Josie, and it's kind of interesting to learn a little bit about who she was and kind of living out in this rustic area all on her own and, you know, without power, without water. And it's just kind of amazing that all the way up to 1964 that she was living in that cabin. And so you can kind of explore the cabin a little bit. And then there are two trailheads right there from the cabin. It's the Box Canyon Trailhead and the Hog Canyon Trailhead. And those are both great hikes out of that area as well. So definitely a lot of good hiking in that area. And then you can take that road back and pick up anything that you haven't seen on the way in. We did enjoy pulling off the road and seeing some petroglyphs in this park. You can actually walk right up to them, right next to them. A lot of them, they're right there off the road, which is kind of neat to be able to see those. There's some that are a little bit farther distance that a pair of binoculars would help see. But some of these, you can literally walk right up to it, right next to the rock. So definitely, definitely cool to see.
Now, does Lily do the Junior Ranger programs generally?
She does. We always encourage her to do it. And like I said, I encourage her to do it because I always learn stuff as well. So the cool thing, and this is the other insider tip, they don't really publicize this. There are actually three badges you can earn at Dinosaur National Monument. You can earn the traditional Dinosaur National Monument badge, which is like you would get at any of the others. But they also have a Junior Paleontologist, which is a separate book. And they have a Night Explorer, which is a separate book. And so you can actually, with a lot of diligence, you can earn all three of those during your visit while you're there. It's one of those little unknown secrets, if you will, that you can get three badges out of there. So
okay, so you can just find out about those at the visitor center.
Yep, go to the visitor center. They've got all the booklets there. The Night Explorer is probably a little bit older. We didn't go after that one. The requirements are pretty difficult. You have to do a lot with you know, nighttime viewing and keeping kids up in the middle of the night to look at the stars.
Kids to bed.
They don't mess around with some of these Junior Ranger programs. Like we've actually had like rangers say, no, we can't give the kids the badges. Sorry. Like, they did not color that in properly.
But
you know, I respect them for it, but the boys were sad.
Yeah. Well, they gotta do it. So you can get three badges out of here, which is pretty amazing. I didn't even know they had the Junior Paleontologist or Night Explorer, and there are only a few parks around the nation that offer those two, and this is one of them where you can pick those up. So if you're collecting, you can add them to the collection.
The night sky must be pretty amazing here.
Yes, it's one of the darkest areas around, and so they do star viewing parties. They weren't doing them when we were there, so I can't really comment on exactly how they're done. But the sky is very, very dark. There's no lights or anything really around the area, so you get an incredible night sky there.
Well, this sounds like a first-class national park site. I mean, I'm pretty impressed hearing about all the stuff that they have going on here. But what about outside of the park? Are there any regional attractions that our listeners really should make an attempt to visit and see?
The closest area is Vernal, which is a pretty good-sized town. They've got quite a bit there, a lot of different restaurants and things. But one of the things that's good to do, and especially one if you've got a rainy day, is the Utah Fieldhouse of Natural History State Park. That's a long name for a dinosaur museum. And so we weren't sure exactly what it was, but there were some recommendations to go to it, and we enjoyed it. So they've got your typical dinosaur displays on the inside, right? They've got reconstructed skeletons and various diorama type things where you can kind of see. There are some hands-on activities for kids there, so they can get in and dig in the dirt and like pull out little dinosaur bones. And they've got a live lab there that if they're working on something, there will be guys in there, trying to extract the bones from the rock that you can see. There's a lot of good displays in there. And then it goes to an outdoor garden that has, like, I don't want to say life-size, but good-sized models of dinosaurs. And they're kind of in a little garden area with some fountains and that kind of stuff. So if the weather's okay to go out there, then you can go out and see some of those dinosaurs. So that's definitely a good thing to do. And if you're going into Vernal, you can't miss the kitschy thing there called Dinah. It's a very large pink dinosaur, and it's kind of one of those iconic things of the area that you've got to stop, get your picture taken with Dinah. You can't miss Dinah right at on the main road, big, huge pink dinosaur. You can't miss it. So you got to stop and get your picture taken there. So,
and that's of course what the kids remember, right?
Oh yes. Yeah. You can do all this fun stuff and they will remember the pink dinosaur. So
I get the sense that maybe you're not into kitsch.
Well, you know, I'm one that would say I want to go see the big ball of string. So I think it's interesting. I don't know that I would go out of my way directly, but if I'm passing something, I would definitely want to kind of go see what it is and find out a little bit more about it. So.
All right. So besides the pink dinosaur, anything yes. else that we should check out while we're in this area?
Yeah. So when we went into town, there's, like I said, there's a bunch of restaurants. The one that we ate at, and it was again, a recommendation that we got, was Plaza Mexicana. And it was a great Mexican restaurant. The chicken that we had was so flavorful. We both commented, we want to drive back to Vernal just to have lunch there. So we're trying to decide if it's worth a 3-hour drive or not, but
the best Mexican restaurants seem to do that to you.
Yes,
you just want that.
Yeah, for some reason that the flavor was just so good. So, you know, if you're going in the area, you like Mexican food, I'd recommend that. And then there's a lot of outfitters there that will do float trips, in rafts down the Green River there. We did not do that when we were there, but that is a very popular thing to do when you're in the area. So.
Is that appropriate for families with young kids, or is it a little bit more adventurous than that?
For sure. There's definitely different levels. They can get you into some rapids and, you know, splashing water all over you, or there's a little bit more calm areas where they can take younger kids and still do a nice float.
Brett, is there anything else that our listeners should know before we wrap up this great
That was an
review?
Awesome itinerary.
Oh, really, really yeah. good travel piece. So anything else?
This is a great park. I would make it a location that you're going to stay 2 nights, 3 nights right in that area. I would probably push it to 3 to make sure you've got time. If you're going to do more of the stuff like the floating the Green River, you're going to probably want a 4th night in there. The highlights that we did in the park, we covered most of that within a day to 2 days. If you want to get out and do a lot more hiking, you're going to want to expand it beyond that. But if you're doing the basics, this would be a great pass-through location. If you're on your way between Colorado and Utah or vice versa, this would be a great way to stop, take a break for a couple of days, and then hit the road again.
Well, thank you so much, Brett, for reviewing the Green River Campground. And thank you also to Jayco for sponsoring Campground of the Week. To see their full line of RVs, visit jayco.com. And to see Brett's stuff, where should we visit you, Brett?
You can visit me at brettnielsen.com, or I'm on Instagram at instagrablin.
If you need those Utah pictures in your life to get you through the winter.
Brett, we are going to see you at the campground.
Indeed. We'll see you guys soon.
Bye.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning in to RVFTA's Campground of the Week.
Links to the campground and regional attractions can be found in the show notes at campgroundoftheweek.com.
And don't forget to check out the other podcasts in our network.
RV Family Travel Atlas is hosted by yours truly, Jeremy and Stephanie Puglisi, and available every Friday morning.
And Girl Camper, Going Places, Doing Things, is hosted by Janine Pettit and released every Tuesday morning.
Join us next Thursday for another great review from our team of campground correspondents who will inspire you to hit the open road and explore America the Beautiful.